Hello. Thank you for tuning in to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Council for Early Career Athletic Trainers. The views and opinions expressed by speakers, guests, or others who have provided materials to and for this podcast are not necessarily those of the IATA. The IATA assumes no responsibility for, nor endorses any of the comments, recommendations, or materials that are provided. Do you need CEUs? Check out the IATA website where you can find a link to EBP Central, working in collaboration with athletic trainers to continue Indiana's tradition of excellence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the IATA podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hebenstreet, and I'm here today with a starting of our new series of Catching Up with Past Presidents. And we're lucky enough today to have the very first president of the IATA, Mr. David Craig. David, you want to kind of introduce yourself and give everybody kind of a rundown of who you are and what you're doing?
Yes. One reason why they asked me to be the first president was I was the head athletic trainer for the Indiana Pacers, the only professional team at that time. In Indianapolis and in Indiana. And the idea was that there would be more notoriety maybe because of my position with the Pacers and with the news media and so forth. And we didn't know how many athletic trainers there were in the state of Indiana, and all came from different backgrounds. And so it was difficult to establish, the grandfathering sessions, who was considered an athletic trainer and night, and who was going to be considered, quote unquote, an athletic trainer in the state of Indiana. So that number has grown tremendously, of course. And we had the support of the State Medical Association. In fact, many times our meetings were at their offices to try to create this. And they really wanted us to be a unit and to be organized so that we could go on to do things like we wanted to do, like maybe get recognition from as certification, maybe down the road some licensure. And of course, I wanted to just go in and have some rules and so forth where we had licensure, but you had to acquire other things before that. Mm-hmm. And Pinky Newell would tell me, slow down, Dave, you can't do all this stuff in one jump. So what we did is we got everybody together, figured out, tried to send out messages, memos and so forth, so we could get people signed up to be a part of a state organization, and doctors who worked in sports medicine encouraged us to do this, especially mm-hmm. the doctors who spent their Friday and Saturday nights and et cetera, supporting the sports in the schools.
Yeah. So you kind of, not to date you or anything like that, or kind of pull out any dates wise, but you were that president, and I know probably a lot of our listeners probably don't really, think of the time where an athletic training wasn't a regulated profession, didn't have licensure, and kind of the fighting, in a way, kind of the fight that that athletic trainers went through in a way to kind of get those and all the different steps that we had to do to obtain that licensure type thing. What was it like back in, I don't want to say back in those days, but when there was no regulation to it and anybody could say that they were a trainer. And back in the day when there was a trainer was just happened. Pretty much the equipment guy.
Absolutely. Anybody could. And not to deface the equipment guy, but somebody was doing something to help. And mm-hmm. that's what they did. But many of those people had the opportunity to be grandfathered in as athletic trainers. And so we had to define what the role was, what the background had to be. Licensure didn't come for a long time.
Yeah.
So it you had to be patient and understanding, but at the same time, you wanted to define what the athletic trainer was, who they were. So like you said, not everybody could say, I'm an athletic trainer.
Yeah. So what, when you became the president of the IAT, what was kind of the landscape of athletic training when that was going forward? You had kind of mentioned the doctors and it's kind of pushed us to go through, but what was that kind of first spurring moment that was like, all right, let's start this?
Well, they wanted to start it as well as we did, the existing athletic trainers, because we knew that we weren't having enough of our athletes being served by the athletic training profession.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to encourage, the schools, the hospitals, whoever could hire an athletic trainer to serve, we wanted to encourage them to do just that.
Yeah.
And the doctors knew they needed somebody on the ground level as an athletic trainer so they could work as team physicians and physicians to support the care of the athlete.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, what were some of your main accomplishments as that president of the ITA, besides kind of getting it up and running?
That was the biggest thing, just getting it up and running and, going through bylaws and things you do for any organization, mm-hmm. Getting some legal assistance in order to get legal assistance and get somebody to support us in legislation, you needed money. So we were always asking for donations in money. I know this is crazy, but back in the day, we didn't have equipment managers with the Indiana Pacers and so forth. Mm-hmm. So when we're on the road, I would do the laundry and I'd take the laundry money and I put it in a kitty and gave it to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association to help with funding for our legal issues.
And just as like a background, you spent what, 35 years with the Pacers?
Kind of, yes, 35 years as the head athletic trainer. Yes.
Going all the way back to the ABA time frame, right?
Yes. Yes.
So long, long time in that professional
yes,
realm.
I worked for the Pacers for 38 years. So okay. It was interesting. It was very good.
I'm sure there are a lot of stories that probably shouldn't be said in a recorded moment, but I'll have to try
later on. We had some great times. And just, a few months ago, Bobby Slick Leonard passed away and mm-hmm. he was my roommate for my first 10 years. So, and that was an education itself. here was this graduate from Purdue University with a coach who was from, an All-American from Indiana University. So we had some great times.
Oh, I'm sure. As we're sitting here at Purdue grad and personally an IU grad, I can see how that might kind of clash here and there every once in a while. Always good stories, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Always the fun, gentle ribbing of each other and, which one's better and where's which school's better from that standpoint. I know
absolutely.
We work with a volunteer coach that was our assistant that's moved on to the as a firefighter who's a Purdue grad, and I think one of his favorite things was as soon as he would see me, ask me how the IU basketball team or IU football team did this weekend, knowing the fact of exactly how they did, just to kind of slightly rub as much as possible.
That's okay.
So what were some of the kind of moving, like what are some of the things that you really enjoy about the profession of athletic training that really kind of got you interested and really pushed you down this athletic training career path?
Well, I have an issue of being very short. And it seems though when I was in high school, everybody else grew but me.
Yeah.
So this coach came up and asked if I'd be a student athletic trainer. I said, absolutely. And I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go to three different high schools, so I had the opportunity to kind of feel the different positions of being a student athletic trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we didn't have an athletic trainer in the high schools mm-hmm. where I went. And it gave me an opportunity to learn a lot on my own. I think everybody took the Kramer course at that time, but you learned a great deal, and you learned on the field experience, you might say, that which you don't necessarily get today, because they don't allow you to do that until you have a degree, which is kind of sad, but that experience is very valuable.
Kind of the true of throwing you in the lake and seeing how well you can swim on your own.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you, I know that you, like you said, you graduated from Purdue and you were able to kind of work under Pinky Newell, kind of another, in a way, you know, legend in the name of, you know, in the School of Athletic Training, especially here in Indiana. What was it like to kind of work with him, and what are some of the things that you kind of grabbed, you know, got from him besides slow down, you can't do it all by yourself all at once?
Well, Pinky, you know, Pinky was not just known in the state of Indiana. He was nationally known. Mm-hmm. And he was basically the George Washington of athletic training. He was the executive officer and executive secretary for the NATA by himself. Mm-hmm. And a very remarkable man. And he really loved athletic training. And he devoted so much time to this profession. And we wouldn't be where we are today if it weren't for Pinky. Of course, I'll tell you a little story, and some people have heard me say this, but I ruined the beginning of the NATA because one day I was, he comes out of his office. Pinky says, "Who made the coffee?" And, you know, I did. I'm excited. He said, "Son, come here. I forgot to put the lid on the coffee maker and it perked all over the office."
Oh.
And it went all over his horizontal filing for the NATA. But let me tell you, within 2 weeks, the NATA had their first national office across the river in Lafayette, Indiana, because he decided that's where it belongs outside of his office.
Yeah.
So, but he encouraged all of us. I mean, even when I was a senior in high school, I was going to the national convention. Mm-hmm. And he encouraged everyone to be involved at the national level, at the state level, at the district level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of had my chances to kind of tour around the U.S. in a way, you know, lived in California for a little while, lived in Texas for a little while, and kind of came back up here to Indiana. So just now kind of getting back into kind of my time of getting involved and volunteering and kind of getting into the leadership area of athletic training. So it's been great so far. So I definitely can see how he, you know, those people are the ones that kind of really push the profession forward, or those that encourage others to kind of continue to get involved and continue to make their mark on the profession. What would you say were some of your, you know, kind of favorite moments as an athletic trainer?
Oh,
kind of a very loaded question without an easy answer.
Yeah, I you know, I don't look at it as what I did. It's what you do for other people as an athletic trainer. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to help other people get healthy, and more importantly, is to help people stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's something that bothers me about the profession now. When I first started to work with Pinky, he told me that 85% of our profession is preventive medicine. Mm-hmm. And I saw that kind of swing away from that, because what happens is, I think we became more clinical. Mm-hmm. Okay. In other words, we're in the training room and we're waiting for people to come in with injuries instead of taking people out of the athletic training room and showing them how they can prevent, find their weaknesses, their dysfunctions physically, that can be remedied, so that we can help these athletes prevent injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that should be the way the pendulum swings for our profession, is to help people prevent injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't do it, there's other professions that adhere to athletics that will do that. I think that it's our job to evaluate athletes, and I mean even on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that we help them prevent injuries and encourage them to do exercises that help them prevent injuries. I would rather, it's hard to designate what you're really doing when you prevent an injury, because the injury doesn't occur. Mm-hmm. But if you can take a set of injuries and look at those in numbers and try to do things to prevent those from occurring, and then look at the data after you've done that to see if you've prevented injuries from occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Like one time I was in a clinic and this athletic trainer walks in and he's bragging about how in his athletes for this season, he had 21 ACLs. Well, I hate to say this. To me, I wouldn't be bragging about that. I would be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd try to figure out why are we having so many ACLs and try to prevent that from occurring. That's our job.
Mm-hmm.
Our job isn't to brag about how many injuries we have. It's what we're trying to do to prevent injuries.
Yeah. What are some of the most unique experiences that you've had as an athletic trainer? I know you've kind of done some Pan American Games and worked with, you know, USA basketball. And
yes, I've worked, you know, whether it be Pan American or whether it be USA basketball developmental. I worked USA basketball in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I've worked overseas with USA Gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
I've even worked international cricket. Can you believe that? Which is interesting because it's not one of my favorite sports to work. But you learn to work all the sports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now sports that are, you know, very popular, that are at the high school levels now, there's so many different sports
mm-hmm.
that have to be covered. And that gets difficult for the young athletic trainers today because there's so many different sports
mm-hmm.
to cover. And I think legally we have a responsibility to cover these sports, you know, whether it be lacrosse
mm-hmm.
or whatever. I know this one school I work for, they wouldn't start an athletic event until the athletic trainer was on the field or on the court.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great policy. And
I would agree.
But the thing is, you only have so many athletic trainers to go mm-hmm. around in a school setting.
Yeah. Especially as it continues to expand more and more into the, you know, thankfully we're getting more athletic trainers into high schools, but they're kind of, you see them starting to expand into the middle school level as well, and even younger athletes from that standpoint. It's, you know, the same kind of ideas of like, we need all of this covered, and you've got one athletic trainer for everything on, you know, everything across the board.
And that's nice, but then we come to the situation, well, how much are these athletic trainers earning? And you know, you have to have a profession that people can support a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pay the mortgage, whatever. And I find that a lot of young athletic trainers are going off into other professions from athletic training so they can make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it isn't just financial. It's they want a life of their own.
Yeah.
You know, because athletic trainers, you know, it's a very demanding time-wise occupation.
Mm-hmm.
It eats up your evenings. It eats up your weekends, and it cuts down on family time.
My wife is usually pretty good at reminding me that here and there, yeah. once in a while.
Yes, but it occurs. Yep. But it's a very demanding. You know, to look back, I could see the stress, even in the days when I was working with Pinky Newell, what that stress had on Pinky and his family, because he spent so much time, you know, with the NATA and with Purdue University.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's usually something that occurs. The athletic trainers become very unselfish and very, very committed to their athletes.
Yep. Yep. I'm lucky though. I've got a very good wife that does her best to support as much as she can, type thing. So I know I'm very lucky from that aspect.
How many children do you have?
I don't have any right now.
Wait until they come.
Exactly.
Then it's a different scenario.
Yep.
But I think, you know, you have to arrange so that people share the job and you cover it. But I know what it's like to not share. Being with the Indiana Pacers, I think I only missed one or two games
mm-hmm.
the whole time in 35 years. And that's when my wife passed away. But other than that,
mm-hmm.
You just never missed a practice. You never missed a game.
Yeah.
Thank God there wasn't COVID. Yeah. So it's crazy. But like I said, it's a very demanding profession.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. You know, what are some of the, besides it, knowing the fact that it's a very demanding profession and kind of, as we had just talked about, what's some advice that you would give, you know, current athletic trainers and some of those that are just now going, you know, they're looking into or going into the profession of athletic training?
Well, one thing about it, you never quit learning. I look at every patient that I have, every athlete that I have, every athlete with a problem, I learn from that individual. Mm-hmm. You learn from the people you're caring for, and you get better all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start seeing relationships or commonalities between one person's injury and another person's injury. And you start to develop your own philosophies on how you approach the patient mm-hmm. and how you deal with the patient. I think that that's important.
Yeah. I do know from kind of own experience wise, it takes a while to kind of get into the flow of things and to kind of really kind of find your own way through and how you're going to, you know, process different information and process different, you know, treatments and, you know, preventative care and rehabilitation and exercise and stuff like that. And everybody kind of has their own kind of circular kind of process of work that will start with this, kind of go from here when they're doing evaluation, start here, kind of go from there and kind of run their own processes through. So it's always interesting to, you know, as you kind of learn more, that you kind of develop and refine those processes each time. I know, you know, when I'm getting into an evaluation, everything else like that, or getting into exercises and trying to plan things out, just kind of looking at things of, all right, well, let's do this, this, and this. You know what? That didn't quite work as well last time. Let's try this. You know, that worked great. So here's a new refinement to my process that I'm going through. So just finding that process is always fun to kind of learn and refine and keep going with it, because it's something that can change every single time you do something.
Absolutely. And you have to open yourself up to change.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's your way doesn't make it the way, or in a certain situation, the best way.
Yeah.
So you have to look, and that's what your colleagues are all about. When you have a situation where you have a problem, it doesn't hurt to pick up the phone and mm-hmm. talk about a situation or something that isn't working for you and what can work for you.
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing sometimes always the difficulty of reaching out for help. I've known so many athletic trainers like, no, I got this. No, it's okay. I got this. It's like, you know, I can help you out. It's not a problem. I'm more than willing to help when I can, where I can. But sometimes yes. just the aspect of being willing to ask for help or, you know, run something by somebody else.
I guess it's like that song that says, be humble and be kind.
Yep.
And that's basically what you have to do.
Yeah.
And the most important person in the relationship as an athletic trainer is the patient, is the athlete, is the person you're working with. And it's amazing. If you will listen to the patient, they will tell you what's wrong. And from what you know, you'll learn how to assess it and take care of it.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then that's why, you know, I find that even today, you know, many doctors, they don't even listen to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even touch the patient. If it weren't for an MRI and an X-ray, they wouldn't even know what to do with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
But the athletic trainer is around the athlete, the patient, more often than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And they can relate to that person, I think, better than anybody else.
I've one of those people that I've always kind of felt and said that I think we're the most equipped to deal with, to work with these athletes because we get to know them, because we understand them and understand, and we're around them. We know their moods. We know how they are. We know, hey, this person, when this starts bothering them, I can tell that, I can see it in their face. I know exactly what's wrong with them. I'm used to them. I know them. And I think that's one of the great things about the athletic training is we do get a chance to make those connections and bonds with the people that we work with. And
absolutely,
it's better for everybody across the board, better for the patient, better for you, better for better treatment, because then you actually understand what's going on with them and you can add to it as best as you can and base something off of them instead of just, you know, very clinical and, you know, missing that bedside manner sometimes.
Yes.
So David, you're, you know, spent 35 plus years with the Indiana Pacers. You're an NAATA Hall of Famer. You're an IATA Hall of Famer. You know, have numerous awards across IATA, NATA, GLADA, across all of those. What are you up to now? Like what's a day in the life of David Craig right now?
Well, I'm actually kind of cutting back a lot.
Yeah.
I'm 74 years old and I'm trying to spend more time for David Craig.
Not a bad thing at all. After all the years of being an athletic trainer and not being able to do that.
But I still see people if they call me and they want me to give an evaluation or give my opinion about something. I do that. Mm-hmm. I did a little work this last week for soccer up at Grand Park. Excuse me, that was lacrosse. I did some work at Marion University this last week. You know, wherever somebody calls me up, they want me to kind of fill in at Roncalli or mm-hmm. whatever. I dropped a pair of orthotics by Brebeuf today for the athletic director. So, you know, I keep busy.
Yeah, anyone and everyone, basically.
Whatever. I just don't turn people down.
Yeah. So I know you came over to UIndy a couple of years ago to work with one of the basketball players. And I remember just kind of sitting back and being able to watch you work with one of them. So I know even then you're still kind of bouncing around anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, I do that. Keeps you young.
Huh?
It keeps you young.
Yes, yes. As much as humanly possible, at least.
Yes.
Got to have something to do. Sitting back, I don't know if I could ever just sit back and not do anything.
Well, I got plenty of work to do. I got a 100-acre farm here. I got plenty of things to do.
So also athletic trainer / farmer.
Yeah, I built a stone wall today with a friend.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So,
having people out for pumpkin patches and everything.
We just throw the pumpkin seeds out, and if they grow a pumpkin, that's fine.
Okay. You know, sometimes with 100 acres, you can have a lot of fun with things like that.
Yeah, we have a lot of, you know, one of my last courses I took at Purdue University, I was told if I took this course, I would have a biology education degree. and I could teach biology. So I took a beginning course in forestry at Purdue University. Mm-hmm. So I have this 100-acre nature reserve, you know, with wetlands and reforestation, and we have ponds and nesting islands. Oh, wow. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like a lot of work too, though.
It can be work, but it's enjoyable. Doesn't consume you.
Yeah, as long as you enjoy your work, it's never actual work, right?
And I think the same thing goes with athletic training. Mm-hmm. You know, it can consume you if you allow it.
Yep. Well, David, thank you again. Thank you again. Like I said, is there any other kind of words of advice you'd like to kind of give out to any of our listeners before we kind of sign off?
Absolutely. Be patient, be kind, and don't get in a hurry, and listen to your patients, and they will direct you. Like a good patient I had one time, every about 10 years, it comes up whether we're going to stay as athletic trainers or sports therapists. So mm-hmm. this lady said, sit down here. So I did. I sat down on the table and she took my hands and she goes, I'm going to tell you what you people are. She goes, if athletic trainers are like David Craig, what you are healers. And she took my hands and she said, through these hands, God has blessed you to help others. And that was it.
Yep. Couldn't say it any better.
Yep.
Well, David, thank you again for kind of jumping on with us and kind of being our first in this series of catching up with past presidents. Please reach out to myself or David if you have any other questions or anything else that you'd like to know or kind of push forward from that standpoint. And we'd love to be able to hear back from you and maybe put it on to a next episode, an upcoming episode in the future. So, David, thank you again for everything. Thanks again for talking with us.
Thank you, Casey.
We'll see you soon, hopefully.
Great job. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Council for Early Career Athletic Trainers. The IATA would like to thank Elite Sponsor, Methodist Sports Medicine, Silver Sponsors, Myotech Sports Medicine and Community Health Network, and Bronze Sponsor, Ultra Ankle. Be sure to follow the IATA on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for information on upcoming events.